We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or broadcast and media, in protecting the anonymity of all alcoholics present or mentioned here today. We hope you hear something at this meeting which you can take away with you and use. We respectfully request, however, that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you, Kevin. And Jessica's going to read the 12 steps.
I am Jessica and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you. Thank you, Jessica. And the 12 traditions, Daryl.
I'm Daryl, I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, that He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers.
Set and go.
Geez, that's a sign there. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you. To continue this great spirit of gratitude, we are very, very happy to have with us this evening a person of humility, love, service, always time for others in helping other people. especially newcomers. And we are very, very happy to have with us Butch. So let's give Butch a warm maritime welcome.
You just keep filling those up. I'm a heavy drinker. My name's Butch Maslin. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I want to thank Marilyn and the committee for the opportunity to come in here and taking part in your celebration this weekend. I consider it an honor and a privilege to be here. And when I say that, I'm not saying it so you'll like me. I'm not saying it because it sounds nice. I'm saying it because I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I'm a guy who considers it a privilege to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a guy who considers it a privilege to come here and be with you people. And so I want to thank you for the opportunity to come in here and taking part in your celebration this weekend. It's been a wonderful time. The people from the East, I don't know if you know this, but at home all the time, Mario will tell you in Ontario, when they talk about people from the East, they always talk of the salt of the earth. The warm welcome, and I've experienced that here this weekend. I've been here before. I was at your conference in Yarmouth a number of years ago and experienced that same welcome and warmth this weekend, and I want to thank you for that. We were talking a lot. Whenever I get up here, I often think of my late sponsor, and we were talking a bit at dinner and stuff. My sponsor came to Alcoholics Anonymous on July the 17th, 1958. And he and I traveled all over the place together. And one of the great joys of my life in AA, and there have been many and continue to be many, is that he was an active AA guy, and he took me with him all over the country where he would go and introduce me. I got to meet a lot of people. And after I was sober for a couple of years and would ask to get to take part in some of these meetings and that, he knew how nervous I would get before getting up to the front of one of these rooms. And he'd sit beside me in the meeting before my name was called, and he'd rub my back. And he'd say, "I know it doesn't feel like it, kid, but I'm with you every step of the way." And I'd get up to the front of the room and look out, and there he'd be sound asleep in his chair. And we'd drive home, and he'd say, "That was a nice talk, Butch." And I'd say, "Thanks, Bobby." It is good to be here and see some old friends. I have some friends from here, and to come and see Marty and Patty and that here, you're really in for a treat tomorrow morning and listening to my friend Mari, who I've known for many years. And it's been a wonderful experience. I love the old-timers panel this afternoon. That was just an incredible meeting, and I've taken in almost everything that has gone on this weekend, and it's just been a great experience. I want to thank... You know, I know that in Nova Scotia you're not that selfish, but in Ontario they're very selfish alcoholics there. I know you're not that way here, but there they are. And it's very easy for me sometimes to come to these conferences and stuff like that and take in meetings and have a wonderful dinner and a dance and just a wonderful weekend and get in my car at the end of the weekend and drive home and sometimes forget all the work that has been done on our behalf. Because these conferences just don't happen. They just don't pop out of thin air. There's people who've been getting together all year long to make sure that this weekend could happen for you and I. There have been people who've sat out at the registration table and given up their entire weekend, didn't get to hear the meetings and stuff on our behalf. And I want to thank those people for their service on our behalf, really and truly. So wonderful job. When I say I'm happy to be here, I really and truly am, because alcoholics don't always get where they're going. Drinking alcoholics seldom get where they're going. But sometimes even sober alcoholics don't get where they're going. I'll tell you what I mean by that, Marilyn. Let me say, first of all, there was a time in my life I was not allowed in the United States of America. And let me add, nor should I have been. They said, "We have enough people like you here already. We don't need to import them." But I applied to the United States for a Department of Justice for a waiver that would allow me to go into the USA, which I have. I don't have it here, but whenever I travel in the States, I have to take it. It's a beautiful piece of paper, about that big. And the United States Department of Justice, and it has my name on it. And it allows me to go into the USA on humanitarian grounds. I don't even know what that means. But it's anyway, when I go there, and the other thing, when I go to the U.S., they want to know, they don't want to know. I had to go to a conference in Illinois. Well, they just don't want to know I'm going to Illinois. They want to know the address where I'm staying. I don't know why, but they seem to want to know. So anyway, I don't know about you, but I, from time to time, can misplace things. So when I got that waiver, I made 25 photocopies just to be safe. Anyway, I'm going to a conference in Illinois. I get up in the morning. I like to travel early Friday morning as I did to come here. I like to get here and take part in the convention. I do not come to conventions to talk. I come here to be a part of the weekend. And anyway, I get all my stuff and I go there. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I believe our custom agents do a wonderful job protecting our borders. God bless them. But I think when those guys and gals go to custom agent school, they teach them how not to smile. Very serious looking bunch. So anyway, I get there and I get up to the line. I got all my stuff. I give him my boarding pass, my passport, and I give him my waiver. He looks at the waiver. He says to me, he says, "What are you, a criminal?" I thought, oh, here we go. I said, "Well, perhaps you might have said that at one time." He says to me, he says, "This is a photocopy." I said, "Yes, sir. The original's at home for safekeeping." Lies just fall out of my mouth. I don't have to think about that. I have to think about the truth. Lie just comes naturally. He says, "You can't travel on a photocopy." He says, "Do you have your I-94 form?" I pulled out the form. He says to me, "That's the wrong form." I thought, this isn't shaping up well. He says to me, "You got to go over there, fill out the right form, and you're going to have to go talk to somebody because you cannot travel on a photocopy." I thought, I'm not going to Illinois today. So anyway, I go, I fill out the form, and I got one of those keen alcoholic minds that we hear about in AA. As a matter of fact, that's the only place you're going to hear about them. And I wait till his line's full, and I see another line with a more gentle-looking man, like Murdo, in the line. And I go to his line. And I go, and I give him all my stuff and that, and he says to me, he says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to Illinois." He says, "What's your purpose of business?" I said, "I'm going to talk at a convention, Alcoholics Anonymous." He says to me, "What address are you staying at?" I forgot to get the address. So I looked at the guy and I said, "I don't know." He says, "You don't know where you're staying?" I said, "No, sir." I said, "But it's okay because somebody's going to pick me up at the airport and take me there." He says to me, "Who's picking you up at the airport?" I said, "I don't know." He says, "Let me get this straight. Somebody you don't know is picking you up, taking you somewhere you don't know where you're going." I said, "Yes, sir, that's right." He says to me, he says, "What did you say you're going to do again?" I said, "I'm going to talk at a conference, Alcoholics Anonymous." He says to me, "What are you going to talk about?" And before I could answer him, he says, "Hold it." He says, "You don't know." So I'm happy to be here tonight. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous on September the 21st, 1989. Two men came and took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't had a drink since that night. I don't know what to tell you about that. It just was the way. I was a hopeless, helpless, chronic alcoholic. I had drank daily for many, many years. I had tried all kinds of things to stop drinking. All kinds of people tried to help me. Two men came and took me to a meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't had a drink since that night. Now, I know that's not everybody's experience. I know a lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and come back to AA. I know a lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking many times, and come back to AA. I know a lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and never come back to AA. But that was my experience, and I realize I'm an incredibly fortunate man for it. I'm also a guy who's liked coming to Alcoholics Anonymous almost from my first meeting. I've just always liked coming. I love listening to the story of an alcoholic. I've loved listening to your stories all weekend long. I love conferences. I love going to meetings. I love going to assemblies, service days. I've just always liked coming. And again, I know that's not everybody's experience. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous. They ain't too happy about being here. Some of them for a long time. But that was my experience. So I have been a richly blessed man since the day I come to AA. So I have no regrets since coming here. Well, I do have one. I do have one regret. That is that I didn't get to drink with some of you people. Haven't you ever thought that? Huh? I listened to some of those guys in the old-timers panel day. I listened to Jerry. I thought I'd like done a little drinking with him. Huh? I've met some characters here. I went to an AA thing in Sault Ste. Marie up in northern Ontario a number of years ago to a little roundup they're having there. And I was going to talk Saturday, and on Saturday morning I get up and went out for some breakfast and I picked up the local paper. I like to read about the community I've been invited to come to. That only seems fitting. I have your local paper in my room. And I'm sitting there and I'm having some breakfast and I'm reading the paper and there's an article on the front page of the paper. This is a true story. Well, I hope my whole story is true, but this part is for sure. There was an article on the front page of the paper. There was a man, they had arrested him, coming across the American-Canadian border, drunk on a stolen street sweeper. And my immediate thought was, I like done a little drinking with that guy. Huh? Anyway, I was 25 years old, and my wife had thrown me out of our home, and I loved her. I really did. I had a new address every night. I lived in the stairwell of apartment buildings on Eglinton Avenue in downtown Toronto. I had a new address each night. I just went from building to building. And at nighttime, I was under that stairwell, and in the daytime, I was like a rat in a sewer, out on the streets looking to hustle, looking to scam, looking to steal to get the money I needed to get to do the things I needed to do. I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous talk about AA luggage, matching green garbage bags. I didn't have any AA luggage. Had the clothes on my back. Still had an ultra suede jacket, though. Going to be cool at any expense. If I was any cooler, I'd have froze to death. I'm 25 years old. I've got the clothes on my back. I'm living in stairwells. And nobody wants anything more to do with me. And let me add right now, nor should they. Because you see, alcoholics of my type are users and takers. I use and I take from everybody I come in contact with. Now, it doesn't always appear that way because I'm a people pleaser. I'm the guy in the bar buying drinks for people, buying things for people, everybody's friend. Let me tell you, the only reason I ever did anything for anyone was so you'd like me. Not because I care about you. I couldn't care less if you lived or died. Made no difference to me. I'm a user and taker. And let me tell you who I use and take from most, the people who love me, my own family. Because see, they can't stop giving, and they keep trying. One more time, this time it's going to work. And they keep giving and giving, and I keep taking and taking, till eventually I break their hearts. And my own family has to push me away because they can't take it any longer. And that's where I was, 25 years old. I'm in the East End of Toronto one night. I'm all jacked up and nowhere to go, as I said. And my wife and I had owned a home in what they call the beaches in Toronto, down by the lakefront. And we had a screened-in porch with a couple wicker couches on it. And I thought, I'm going to slip in there and grab a couple hours and get out before she wakes up. Well, I pass out. And I wake up to one of these. And I opened my eyes and looked, and there was that little gal that I loved. And she looked at me with disgust and pity. And she said, Butch, you are a useless piece of scum. And you are never going to change. And if you care anything about me at all, you'll get up and get out of here. And please don't ever come back because I can't stand to look at you the way you are. And I got up and I left there and I went down to what they call the boardwalk down on the lakefront. And it was July or August, I don't know, but it was summer and it was a hot, hot day. Hot. And I'm hungover and I'm sick and I'm heartsick and I'm dirty. And I walked down to the lakefront, and I was sitting down there on a park bench. And I looked over where you guys are sitting, and there was another bench, and there was a little boy, 5 or 6 years old, sitting on that bench eating a popsicle. And I looked over at the little boy, and you know what I thought to myself? Wish I had a dime for a popsicle. The big shot. The guy in the bar buying everybody drinks, everybody's friend, good old Butch, sitting on a park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle, nobody on the face of this earth wanting anything more to do with him. And here's the thought that I had at that moment. I knew right then that's as good as my life was ever going to get. Now, I have always been a talker. I've always been a scammer and a hustler. I knew I'd put a deal together. I'd rip someone off. I'd get the money somewhere. I always did. But I knew at that moment that that park bench and places like it was where I was going to end back up every single time. And I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. I was 25 years old. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33. I had 8 more years on those streets. And I will not bore you tonight with the details because if you're an alcoholic like me, you already know. It never gets better. It always gets worse. and I had 8 more years. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33 years old, and I joined a group, and I got a sponsor, and I did the things these people told me to do. Forget this suggested stuff, the stuff they told me to do. You know where I was last year before last? Huh? I was in Rome, Italy. Rome, Italy. Standing in the Sistine Chapel, looking at the paintings of Michelangelo from 500 years before, and the tears started to pour down my face. And I thought of that kid sitting on that bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Long way from that park bench to the Sistine Chapel in Rome. Long, long way from the people we've listened to all weekend, from where they were to where they are today. It is a long way from where you and I came from. Many of us, the dregs of society. Many of us, our own families didn't even want us around any longer. Yet here we sit this weekend, members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, living good, full, productive lives. Incredible thing. How do we get from where we were to where we sit tonight? Because that is not supposed to happen for people like you and I. But you know how it happens, don't you? And it only happens one way, and that is through the grace of God. The grace of God that you and I have been introduced to through the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous and a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. You sure want to believe. I am sure happy to be here tonight. I like drinking. I don't know about you guys, but I like to drink. I sometimes think people in AA think it's sacrilegious to say they like drinking, for God's sakes. Huh? I hear people get up to the front of these rooms say things like, drinking took me places I didn't want to go. I'm thinking, really? Doing things I didn't want to do with people I didn't want to be with. And I'm thinking to myself, why'd you bother? I wanted to be with those people in those places doing those things. I love drinking. I started to drink at an early age. I hear people talk an awful lot in AA about dysfunctional families. Was my family dysfunctional? I have no idea. Let me just tell you, it wasn't the Cleaver residence around my home. There was lots of parties in my home. There was lots of drinking in my home when I was a little boy. Always on weekends there'd be parties. And they'd let me play bartender. I could take them beers and take away the empties, and they'd let me have swigs. And they'd say, isn't he cute? And I loved that attention. So I started to drink when I was 4 years old. Now, I wasn't a daily drinker when I was four. My allowance wouldn't allow it. I actively sought out alcohol. I was 12 or 13 years old. I got a guy to go into a liquor store, get us a couple bottles of wine. I was going to be a wine connoisseur. 2 bottles of Four Aces. And I'll tell you, any wine I ever drank had a cap, not a cork. We drank the wine, got drunk, puked, and passed out, and that was the end of my social drinking. All downhill from there. I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe you hear this too, they came to AA hoping to learn how to become a social drinker. Huh? Came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous was going to teach them how to drink socially. I want to tell you tonight, I didn't want to be a social drinker when I drank. I don't want to be a social drinker tonight. I don't particularly like social drinkers. I find them weird. Weird people. You ever watch a social drinker drink? They let the ice melt in their glass. That's sick. That's alcohol abuse. You ever drink with a social drinker? That's enough to make you puke. Isn't it? You're having a few scoots. Would you like another one? Oh, no thanks. I'm starting to feel it. Really? I thought that's when you put it in overdrive. Huh? I'm a barroom drinker. I love bars. I don't identify with closet alcoholics. Doesn't mean they're not alcoholic, just drank differently than me. You know those people that get the bottle, go in and lock the door, put on the country western music. I don't identify. I'm a barroom drinker. I love bars. I like opening the door to a bar. Huh? That smoke it billow out, the tinkle of glass, the smell of stale urine. I love it. I love that stuff. I like neon. I like neon when I was drinking. I still like neon. That's why I stay out of those casinos. They're not good for guys like me. And I got to tell you, I thank God I never tried to get sober in the United States of America. I don't think I'd have made it. Oh, God, I love drinking there. They got many more of these places than we have here in Canada. I call them juke joints. You know those divey little rat hole bars you see on a corner? These divey little joints with a neon sign says cocktails. Oh, huh? I was on my way to an AA thing in Pennsylvania a number of years ago. I decided to drive. I was going there with my ex-wife, and well, she wasn't my ex-wife then, but... And there's a story right there. There's a lot said in that statement. And anyway, I'm driving through this little town in Pennsylvania. I'm driving down the main street, and I hammer on the brakes to my car. I'm backing my car up. She said, Butch, what are you doing? I said, I got to see this again. And there it was, this divey little rat hole bar with a neon sign. Said, stop for one, stay till one. Oh! If I'd have been drinking, I'd have had that tattooed on me. Just a work of art. I loved that drinking. I loved the lifestyle. I loved everything about it. And I'm not going to talk any more about my drinking other than to very quickly share with you what drinking does to and for me. It is important that I just want to give to, is there anybody here in their first year here? Who they put their hand up? Oh, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to AA. Welcome to AA. You're going to be my go-to guy tonight. You're going to hear people in AA meetings get up in the front of these rooms and say things like, I don't like drunkalogs. When you hear that, buckle up. You're about to listen to 50 minutes of drinking. It's important that we talk in a general way about our drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous for the purpose of identification. That is the greatest tool that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. One alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works for alcoholics, other programs work for other problems. We have to have identification, and that's why we talk about our drinking. But I've come to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't matter if I'm drinking Dom Perignon or Aquashave. Doesn't matter if I'm drinking in the Fairmont Hotel or under a bridge in a box. It's what drinking does to me that's important. And that's what I very quickly want to share with you, what drinking does to and for an alcoholic of my type. The things I'm going to share with you, I was not thinking of them when they were happening. I saw them in inventory. I saw them as you took me back through my life in sobriety. I remember being a young boy in school. 10 years old, 12 years old, little boy, I don't know how old. And I would be in that classroom and a teacher would be at the front of the class and she'd ask a question. And she'd start looking around that classroom to see who she was going to ask to answer that question. And my head goes down like this. Oh, don't let her ask me. Because I know if she makes eye contact with me, she's asking me to answer the question and I don't want to answer the question. It doesn't even matter if I know the answer to the question, I don't want to answer the question. And when I went to school, we used to have to do book report. Get up in front of a whole classroom full of kids. Oh, no good. No good. I get up in the morning, I'd say, Ma, I've been puking all night. I'm sick. I can't go to school today, Ma. Please don't make me go. Because I want to tell you something. I would be terrified, terrified at the thought of getting up in front of that classroom full of kids. Every decision I made in my life was based on fear. Most of it unfounded and ungrounded. Where I go, what I do, all based. I get goofy every now and then. I don't know if you ever get goofy like this, but I tell my wife on a Sunday I've quit drinking. You ever make those rash statements? You know immediately you've made a mistake. I'd tell her on a Sunday I've quit drinking, I'd have to go to a wedding that following Saturday. You ever go to a wedding sober? That's a bad deal. That is a bad deal. I would be at that church sweating, thinking about that dance that was going to happen in 3 hours. I'm back at that reception now, and I'm telling you something. My hands are sweaty. I got a knot in the pit of my gut. I feel awkward and out of place, and it is absolutely horrible. And I have to do one of two things. I got to go to that bar and get a few drinks into me, or I got to get out of there because I can't stand the way I feel. Every decision I make is based on fear. Where I go, what I do is all. Butch, you want to go over with these guys? I'd say, I'm not going with those goofs. You want to know what the truth is? I felt awkward there. I felt out of place there. Do you want to know what kills an alcoholic like me? I think I'm afraid of nothing, and I'm afraid of everything. And I don't even know I'm afraid. I don't even know. We talk an awful lot in meetings. I go to resentment or discussion meetings, a topic that, let's discuss resentments tonight. Huh? I prefer to call it hate. Now, I know you're not that sick here, but in Ontario we are. Hate. I'm the type of alcoholic, I'm out driving in my car, I'm at a red light, I'm on the nod by now, and that light would turn green and the guy behind me lays on his horn. Whoa. I almost go through the roof of my car. I want to get out of my car, go back there, open that door, drag him out by the throat, take a crowbar and crack his skull open. I know you spiritual giants never thought thoughts like that, but I do. Hate. I'm not talking anger management here. I'm talking a white rage. I'm talking a white rage that I don't have a minute before and I don't have a minute after. But I have a rage inside of me that comes out every now and then that I have absolutely no control over. And I say things and do things to people I never wanted to do. And let me tell you who takes the brunt of my rage if you're a people pleaser like me. It happens behind closed doors. Because, see, I'm the guy in the bar wanting everybody to like him. I'm the guy buying the drinks for everybody, passing the bag around, everybody's friend. So you don't display that rage there. You keep it for at home for the people who already care about you. See, I have their approval. I don't need it. It's yours I need. Huh? Lonely. I'm 25 years old. I'm standing at a subway platform in downtown Toronto on a Friday evening, all jacked up, and a train pulled up and the doors opened, and a young couple my age got off that train holding hands. And they walked off into the night laughing and smiling. And I looked at that couple, and God, I felt sad. I thought, why can't I be like those people? Why can't I be like other people? Why is all the trouble got to keep happening? I remember walking through a nice residential area on a warm summer's night. I'd walk down that street. It'd be a nice warm night, just getting dark out. And I'd see the nice homes there, and I'd see the television on inside and the family in there. And God, I feel like crying. Why can't I just have a nice home and a family like other people? Why is all the trouble got to keep happening in my life? From as long as I can ever remember, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. If I was in this bar drinking, I'd say, guys, drink up, let's go over to the other bar. If we're at this party, I'd say, guys, drink up, let's go over to that party. Never quite right. I don't know what it was like for you, but I'll tell you, I get one of those double vodkas or whatever I was doing, and it was like this. I don't know if you remember that or not. Here, it's like this, here. I get goosebumps. I did that one night, and two guys get up and left. They remembered the feeling. You should see when I do that at detox. They're on the ceiling. It's beautiful. I have a couple of those double vodkas, and let me tell you something. Those sweaty hands would go away. That knot in my gut would vanish. The rage would subside. The loneliness leaves. And I walk into that wedding like I own the joint. And I am moving and grooving. And I'm talking to the ladies, and I'm sitting with my buddies, and we're drinking and snorting and carrying on. And at that moment, everything in my life is absolutely perfect. And my perception of reality changes. And I get an immediate sense of ease and comfort. And that's why I drink alcohol, because I like the effects produced by it. But I'm alcoholic. Something happens to me that only happens to one out of every 10 people, called a phenomenon of craving. And I'd start drinking, I'd drink 60 ounces of vodka, and I'd end up smashing up my car. I go out after work for a few beers with the guys, I go on a 3-day bender, I get fired from my job. I tell my wife I'm going out for a loaf of bread, I run into my buddies, I'm gone for 3 months, and my wife's leaving. I'm out there drinking, partying, carrying on, I don't want to stop, I have no money, so I'm stealing yours. Now I go to jail. And what everybody focused on in my life was the crash cars, the broken marriages, lost jobs, going to jail. We looked at drinking. We never looked at alcoholism. And people told me from the time I was 18 years old, Butch, if you just quit drinking, you'd be okay. And there was times I wasn't drinking, and guess what? I wasn't okay. I'm crazier sober than I ever was when I drank. But all those well-meaning people, and they were well-meaning people, could see was that when I drank, the trouble that followed. So naturally, they said, stop drinking. But those well-meaning people had no idea how I feel when I'm sober. How could they know? I didn't even know. I would love to stand up here tonight and tell you I woke up one morning, HFC was dying to lend me money. Work was thinking of promoting me. My wife was sending me flowers. And I thought, I think I'll join AA today. Huh? Every now and then I hear some moron from the front of one of these rooms say things like, if you're not here for the right reasons, you might as well drink. And every now and then I'd like to get that tire iron back out. Huh? The right reasons? Did you come to Alcoholics Anonymous for the right reasons? I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had nowhere else to go. My boss called me into work on a Tuesday. He said, Butch, you're a very hard worker. I said, well, thank you. He said, but you're not here much. I felt he was being picky. He said, do you think you might have a problem with alcohol? I said, no, but I know what the problem is. He said, maybe you'd share that with me. I said, it's my health. He said, really? I said, yes. Now, granted, my poor health may have something to do with my drinking. I'm going to quit drinking. My health's going to get better. Everyone's going to be okay. He said, do you think you might need some help quitting drinking? I said, no, I'm just going to quit. Got up and left his office, was to find out later his wife had been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for a number of years. Can you imagine the chuckle he had as I left? He's just going to quit. That was Tuesday. I woke up Thursday in another hotel room in a town drunk. I didn't keep him waiting long. And for whatever the reason this morning, I just knew the jig was up. I knew I was in a lot of trouble. I'd used all the lies. Alcoholics are liars. Huh? I don't know what that's about. I'd lie when the truth will serve me better. I'm a pathological liar. I'm the type of alcoholic, I go out and play golf all by myself and cheat on the scorecard. I do. That's not the best part. At the end, I look and go, good game, Butch, good game. I believe my own lies. So I've used all the lies. I know I'm in trouble. I got to come up with something good. I had a few tequilas. I turned my mind to it, and I thought, I know what I'll tell them. I'm alcoholic, and I'm going to go to AA. And that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And if there's anybody here tonight who's new, and I surely hope there is, we couldn't care less why you're here. We couldn't care less. We're just glad to see you. And maybe, just maybe, by the grace of God, something someone will say, something you'll hear, something you'll read, and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous can happen in your life, and you can go on to live a happy and useful life like so many of these men and women have been able to do. Just keep coming, because we're glad to see you. And I started coming to AA, and as I said earlier, I've been a blessed man since the day I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a deep, deep love in my heart for the old-timers. A deep love. Men and women who've been coming for 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years, who've made sacrifices and commitments so that this thing would be here for a guy like me. I love them from the bottom of my heart. And if you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I would urge you to get close to these men and women and learn from their experience, because we're not going to have them with us forever. And I had some giants come into my life. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say you should never put anyone on a pedestal. Well, you do what you need to do. But let me tell you something. I have some people in AA on a pedestal. Never for a moment have I lost sight of their humanities. Do you want to know the greatest gift that my sponsor ever gave me? The greatest thing Bob Dobson ever did for me? It wasn't some profound thing that he showed me in the book. It wasn't some brilliant thing that he said to me. The greatest thing my sponsor ever did for me, and the old-timers continue to do for me, was he allowed me to see his warts. He allowed me to see him get afraid. He allowed me to see him get selfish. He allowed me to see him get angry. He allowed me to see these things. Because if he hadn't, and you don't continue to, I will never measure up. We are much more brothers and sisters in our defects than we are in our virtues, aren't we? And I had some giants come into my life, none more than my own sponsor. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, if you like your sponsor, you have the wrong sponsor. I hear that and I know I'm listening to an idiot. An idiot. I didn't like my sponsor. I loved my sponsor, and I love my sponsor today. You were the first people that helped me understand what my problem was. Because I don't know about you, but when I got here, I had absolutely no idea. No clue. I'd been told what my problem was. Lots of people told me. My parents told me. Police told me. Courts told me. Docs. All kinds of people told me. Butch, just quit drinking. You were the first people that said to me, Butch, drinking's not your problem, it's your solution. How you feel when you're sober is your problem. You are restless, irritable, and discontent, and you have to drink again. I don't have a choice whether I drink or not. I have lost the power of choice. That's what makes me alcoholic. I hear people all the time say, well, I can't understand why Billy's drinking. What can't you understand? That's what makes me alcoholic. I don't have a choice whether I drink or not. I have to drink again. I have lost that choice, and I am powerless over alcohol. Had absolutely no idea. You told me that sober and untreated, two things are going to happen eventually. I will get so restless, irritable, and discontent, I have to do one of two things. I don't have a choice. Blow my brains out or drink again. Most of us drink again. Some take the other route. I had a guy that I was on the beaches of Myrtle Beach with last fall. Got a call a little while ago, took a gun and blew his head off. Sober. Couldn't stand the way he felt any longer. I have to drink again. Lack of power was my dilemma. And you told me that is what this program is about, and that is what these 12 steps in this book are about. They're a series of actions that if I start to take, will remove that obsession to drink, to allow me to find a power greater than myself that will solve my problem. You told me that what we have here is a set of principles that are spiritual in their nature. And if I would practice them as a way of life, not talking about them, discussing them, and analyzing them, but if I would start to practice them as a way of life, would remove the obsession and allow me to live happily and usefully whole. Incredible deal. incredible deal. In all that mayhem that was going on in my life, in all that destruction, and all the hurt lives, and all that stuff that was going on, all I ever wanted was to be okay. I just wanted to be okay. And you guys told me that you had a design for living here, and that you had a practical program of action, and if I would start to practice as a way of life, would allow me to live happily and usefully whole. Incredible thing. Incredible thing. You told me that selfishness and self-centeredness was the root of my problem. There was lots of visible problems in my life. Lots of stuff that was very clear to see. But you told me the root of that problem, underlying those problems, was selfishness and self-centeredness. You told me that Alcoholics Anonymous was a program of action. It's about change. And those changes start small and they start to grow. And you helped me with the basic fundamentals of AA. You taught me those things like joining a group and becoming an active member in my group, being a participating member. You taught me about our traditions. You taught me that there's three legacies in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not just all about sitting in meetings and looking at me, that we have three legacies here. And you took me through this stuff. You encouraged me to read our history. You encouraged me to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and AA Comes of Age and pass it on. You told me that if I was going to spend my life here, it just makes sense that I understand where we came from. And you taught me these basic and you gave me that foundation. You taught me simple things like, Butch, we want you to come to the meeting early, go to the washroom, get your coffee, sit down and be quiet. Maybe you don't want to listen to what's going on in those meetings, but maybe that couple sitting there would like to. And for once in your life, Butch, why don't you think of somebody else other than yourself? It was true. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been on the street since I was 13 years old. I had a sewer for a mouth. I didn't know any other way to talk. And nobody embarrassed me in an AA meeting. Nobody centered me out or put me down. But you took me aside after the meeting with love. And you said to me, Butch, this isn't some juke joint bar room you're sitting in now. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a classy organization of ladies and gentlemen. And we don't talk that way in AA. And maybe that filthy language doesn't bother you, but maybe it bothers those gentlemen sitting there. And for once in your life, Butch, why don't you think of someone else other than yourself? And it was true. And the changes started small and they started to grow. And you started to take me through this process. You took me through that inventory to help me see the things that I needed to see that were blocking me from the sunlight. I was sober, a few months, and I was in a meeting one night and it was announced at the meeting that there was going to be a retreat coming up. And I went to this old guy, his name was Harry Kemp. Harry was sober, I think, about 1,000 years. He was God's first sponsor. I said to Harry, what goes on at those deals? He said, Butch, don't you worry about it. You just go. He said, it's going to be all AA people there. There's going to be meetings. Just come. So I got a couple guys and we went to this retreat. And when I went in there that night, there was a man sitting there, a longtime AA guy sitting there, who I'd heard talk at a roundup in my first weeks. And I saw him there. When I saw him, I immediately just felt good seeing him there. And we were sitting around that night, a bunch of people talking and smoking, drinking coffee and lying like alkies do. And I was sitting beside this man. And he was one of those men, and I know many of you, if not all, you know what I'm talking about. He was one of those people you just like to be near. There was something about him. There was a kindness about him. There was a gentleness about him. And it got late into the night, and he was going to bed. And he got up, and as he got up, he was going to bed. He ever so gently put his hand on the top of my head and said, I'll see you in the morning, kid. And I got goosebumps, and I never thought any more of it. The next morning, there was a meeting, and he was talking. He was telling his story. And as he was telling his story, I could feel those goosebumps that I'd felt the night before. And I could feel myself starting to well up. And at the end of his talk, he said that he wanted to close with a wish for us. And he said that that wish for us was that God's richest blessings, be heaped upon each and every one of us. And here's where the miracle happened for me. He said, because my dear, dear friends, you're deserving of absolutely nothing less. And I started to cry. And the weekend finished and we were going home on the Sunday and I'm driving home. I got two other guys in the car and as I'm driving down that road, I can feel my eyes starting to fill up with tears. And I'm trying not to cry because we all know tough guys don't cry. And I'm driving down that road and as I'm driving down that road, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt two things for the very first time in my life. The first thing that I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt was that there was a God and that He was with me. And the other thing that I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, I knew I was going to be okay. I knew it that day, and I know it tonight. And I came back from there, and I truly believe that that day I took the first three steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I became willing to do whatever it is you people told me that I had to do. And you started to take me through that process. You took me through the inventory process to help me see the things that I needed to see, to allow the sunlight of the Spirit to come into my life. And you took me through that. I needed to see. I don't see that stuff on my own. You know, I sponsor a lot of guys, and I can see in 1 minute. When those guys are getting off track, I spot it in 1 second. When those little rats call me on the phone, those little maggots, I can hear on the phone when they're lying, right? Just like that, I hear it. But it's a funny thing. I don't see it so clearly in myself. It's like there's a thin veil there. That when it comes to me, I don't see that stuff so clearly as I can see it in you. That's why sponsors need sponsors. And you took me through that process, and you took me through the amends where I started to get right with the world, started to be able to look you in the eye, started to be clean on the inside. And something that's been very important as time goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I've listened to people in meetings debate for 45 minutes whether they were recovered or recovering. Smoke starts coming out my ears. Semantics. Huh? But I tell you what you showed me in the book. You showed me in the book where it says it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and to rest on our laurels. And if we do, we're headed for trouble because we are not cured of alcoholism. What we have is a daily reprieve that's contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Not my spiritual condition, because some days I think my spiritual condition is a lot better than it really is. The maintenance of my spiritual condition. And my spiritual condition is maintained here with you in Alcoholics Anonymous, doing the things that I need to do today. You see, I cannot stay sober today because I used to be a GSR. I cannot stay sober today because I used to go to the detox. I cannot stay sober today because I used to make coffee at my home group. Alcoholics Anonymous is about what I'm doing today, about the actions that I'm taking in my life today on a daily basis. And that's how I maintain that spiritual condition in continued sobriety. And you told me that I had to continue to grow. I had to improve that conscious contact with the God. You know, I was never a disbeliever. I always believed. If you'd have said to me at any time in my life, "Do you believe in God?" I would have said, "Yeah, I believe in God." But it had absolutely no meaning in my life whatsoever. Absolutely nothing personal to me in my life. As a matter of fact, God, as I believed, was a man way up in the sky with a beard and long hair and robes, and he watched over everything. And if you were good, good things happened, and if you were bad, bad things happened. We hear it talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous about our problem being a conscious separation from God. Well, if God's way up there and I'm down here, have you ever heard any more of a conscious separation than that? Huh? You see, you were the people that told me that deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. That the great reality for us is that God has entered our hearts and lives in a way that is indeed miraculous. That God is in here. And you taught me and helped me to understand through watching you people. You see, I slowly came to believe. And I found a God that was personal to me. Because I believe that through prayer and meditation that I improve that conscious contact for me is that power becomes real. That power to me isn't some magical, mystical thing out here. That power today is something that is real in my life. That power is something that I tap into today that is real in my work, in my relationships with people, in everything that I do. I'm a guy that believes that our lives are either entirely spiritual or they're not spiritual. I don't believe that for me spiritual is something I can have in certain areas of my life and not in other areas. And it's probably one of the most important things today in my day is that time in the morning. To be quiet. Just to be quiet. I'm not a guy that has mantras and chants and that. I'm not saying anything about that. It's just not what I do. To me, that time of meditation is just to be able to sit and be quiet. Very difficult thing for an alcoholic like me. Very difficult thing. You know, it's an incredible thing that I would sit in meetings and talk about God, and it is the power of God that is giving me everything that's great in my life, and everything is because of Him, and I give Him about 15 seconds in the morning and another 10 seconds at night. Probably part of the greatest day, part of my day is that close to an hour I take in the morning just to read some stuff and be quiet and to start to have that power be a real working power in my life. And the longer I'm here, the more that power becomes real and the closer I get. And I truly believe that without that, I will not stay here. Truly, truly believe that. And the great paradox, Alcoholics Anonymous, she told me if I want to keep it, I got to give it away. You showed me in the book where it says nothing ensures us immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. When all else fails, this works. You said the occasional good deed is not enough. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others. You showed me in the book it says unless we continue to enlarge and perfect on our spiritual life, we will surely drink when we hit those certain low spots. And if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous and are fortunate enough to stay here, trust me, you will hit some certain low spots along the way. Huh? Incredible thing. If we were to ask the people, we've heard it all weekend long from the people who've shared from these podiums and that, how great their life is since coming to AA. We heard it in the Al-Anon and the AA talk from Michael and David on Friday night. What has happened in his life because of Alcoholics Anonymous and his son. And we've heard that in stories all weekend long. And we could go to this meeting and meetings all over the world tonight and say to people, how's your life since coming to Alcoholics Anonymous? And you know the answers we'd hear, don't you? Huh? My life has never been like this. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me in the world. If what has happened to us isn't enough, you and I are then given the gift and the ability to make a difference in someone else's life. Incredible thing. Incredible gift. It says in our book that alcoholics laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. Have you ever wondered sometimes what visitors might be thinking of us? Huh? I don't know if you do this here, but in Ontario, if you're celebrating your AA birthday, you can pick the speaker and the people that take part in the meeting, and maybe some family members will come, some friends, non-alcoholics come. Don't know anything about AA, never been to AA. You ever wonder what some of those people might be thinking? Huh? Some monkey like me gets up to the front of the room and says things like, yes, I bought a brand new Cadillac, picked it up at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning and totaled it at 10. We all laugh. Huh? Told my wife I was going out for a loaf of bread. I ran into my friend. I went to Alaska. Come home 6 months later. We all laugh. Huh? I got a buddy of mine in California. He talks about spilling a bottle of whiskey in his bed and sucking it out of the sheets. We all laugh. You ever wonder what those visitors might be thinking? Huh? It says we laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. You know what it says after that? Of course you do. You've read the book. It says, why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we? Because we have recovered and been given the power to help others. Incredible gift. You and I, when properly armed with facts about ourselves and armed with this solution, are able to make the difference in a few short hours when nobody else was able to. Incredible gift we've been given. My life before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous had absolutely no meaning or no purpose whatsoever. I have no idea what your life was like. It's none of my business. But I'll tell you, mine had none. I was either drunk, planning on getting drunk, recovering from being drunk. I was in trouble, trying to get out of trouble, planning on more trouble. My life focused around, I worked all week so I could get drunk all weekend. I worked to get money to drink. That was my life. And all the people in my life were the same. Alkies don't hang out with social drinkers. No meaning and no purpose. I go to a detox at home, not because I'm some saint. It's not my job. It's the way I've been taught. I am the product of strong sponsorship, and I believe in strong sponsorship. And I'm a guy that believes that without sponsorship, we will not make it in Alcoholics Anonymous. We will not make it. Anyway, I go to this detox. We have a big speaker meeting Sunday mornings in Barrie, where I live. Amari's been there before, maybe as many people as this room or more. And I like to take new people to speaker meetings so they can listen. I happen to think it's good for new people to listen. I know it's not that fashionable today. I happen to think it's good. So anyway, I go there and there's a guy in there and he's bad. I mean bad, bad sick. I'm not talking hungover bad or detoxing. I'm talking physically bad shape. I thought this guy might die, Marilyn. He might die. Well, I thought about it. I figure he could die at the meeting as easy as he could die at the detox. Dying's dying. You got to do it somewhere. So I took him with me. We took in a nice meeting. We spent an hour or so after the meeting talking about this way of life, this design for living we have, this practical program action. And I left him. I didn't see him again. I'm sitting in a meeting one day, and I see this guy coming across the room. I can see he's headed for me. Clean-cut looking guy, had a shirt, pair of slacks on. Says to me, he said, Butch, he said, you probably don't remember me. I said, I'm sorry, I can't say that I do, but I meet a lot of people. He says, my name's Ziggy. I went, holy smokes. Now, that's not really what I said, but that's what I'm saying here. He says, you remember me? I said, oh, I remember you. It's the guy, and he's looking good. He said, Butch, I just wanted to come and thank you for taking me to that meeting that morning. He says, I haven't had a drink since that morning. It's almost been a year. I said, well, congratulations. He said, I was wondering if I could ask a favor of you. I said, if I can do it, I will. He says, will you come and talk at my one-year AA birthday? He said, I'd be honored to do that. I went to talk at a meeting last summer, big meeting, and I got to the front of the room like this, and I started crying. I couldn't get rolling. And I'll tell you why. I looked out, and there sitting at the front table in a suit and tie, looking like $1 million, with his wife and all his children, was Ziggy. And he was getting his 15-year medallion. Took him to his first meeting. I talked at his 1 year, talked at his 5 year, talked at his 10 year, talked at his 15 year. You think my life doesn't have meaning? You think my life doesn't have purpose today? My life is so rich and so full. I could stand up here for the next 2 hours. I'd be all alone, but I could do her. Talking to you about things that have happened in my life since I came to this program and surrendered to you. Just an incredible deal. Every single thing that's good in my life. I'm going to get married in 2 weeks' time. 2 weeks from now, I'm going to get married to a beautiful lady. Beautiful lady. Everything in my life that is good, anything that I am or ever hope to be, is because of you. If I lived to be 1,000 years old, I could never pay you guys back. Never. Do you want to know the kicker to this thing? You've never asked me to. You've never asked me for a single solitary thing since the day I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You've merely suggested to me, although at times strongly, that I try to give a little bit back of what's so freely been given to me. Take a new guy to a couple of meetings. Show him some love and some kindness. Maybe give him a hug and tell him he's going to be okay. I don't know how you feel about that, but it seems like an incredibly small price for what's been given to me. Huh? Incredible deal. Our theme of gratitude. I think the thing we talk about most of all in AA, I think if we could take a survey and find out what we talk about more than anything else, it'd be a hands-down thing, huh? Discussion meetings, do we have a topic tonight? I think the topic, more often than not, gratitude. Let's discuss gratitude. Aw. My sponsor told me, Butch, gratitude is an action, not a thought. Don't tell me how grateful you are. Show me. Show me you're grateful. And I just want to tell you tonight that I'm extremely grateful just to be grateful. Because before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was never grateful a single solitary day in my life. No matter what I had, it was never enough. If I had a car, I wanted a bigger car. If I had a house, I wanted a newer house. If I had a job, I wanted a better job. It didn't matter what I had, I always wanted more or different. Didn't know the meaning of gratitude. I had the good fortune to go to our international in Minneapolis. Quick little sidebar. You know where it says in our book that our past will be our greatest asset? Huh? U.S. Immigration has not read that chapter. No. I'm going to Minneapolis to our international convention in 2000. I wasn't able to go to Seattle and San Diego. I just couldn't go. But I'm going now with my sponsor. I am like a little boy the night before Christmas. I am so excited. I couldn't even sleep. 4 o'clock in the morning, I go. I pick up Bobby. We go to Pearson International Airport. Excuse me. To make a long story short, he got on the airplane. I didn't. I'm here to tell you our past will be our greatest asset. I got to Minneapolis, just took a couple days, all in the name of God. Anyway, when you get there and register, they ask all the members sober over 40 years to let themselves be known when they register. And on Saturday night at the big meeting, they have all the members sober over 40 years sit together at the foot of the stage. And my sponsor at that time was sober over 40 years, and by that time Bob's health was declining. And his breathing wasn't so good, and he wasn't walking that well. And on Saturday night in Minneapolis, they said to me, kid, you take your sponsor down there and you stay with him. And on Saturday night in Minneapolis, I sat in that dome with 50,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. 202 members sober over 40 years sitting there. And I looked over at that little man who loved AA as much as life, and I watched the tears rolling down his face with gratitude for a program he'd given his entire life to. And I felt a sense of gratitude beyond anything I've ever known. Everything that is good in my life is because of you. anything that I have in life that's important is because of you. You know, I had some people say, "But you talk a lot about gratitude at those meetings. Couldn't help but notice you have a new car out in the parking lot. Business is going pretty good. Things are all right." How grateful would you be if they weren't? And that's a real fair question, isn't it? Pretty easy to be grateful when our lives are rolling along real well, isn't it? But what about when they ain't? Well, that sponsor that I've talked about, he and I were about as close as two human beings can possibly be. And his health continued to decline, and Bob was on oxygen all the time, and he was in a wheelchair then, and he'd been in the hospital twice that month. He wasn't good. And he had to talk on June the 8th, on a Tuesday night, in a group a couple hours from our home at a young gal, Cliff and Mary Hicks's daughter, old-time members, their daughter, at a one-year birthday. And it was a hot, humid day, and I phoned up Bob. I said, "Bobby," I said, "I'm going to call Cliff and Mary and tell them we can't make it tonight." I said, "That room is low. It's not good. They would not want you to come like this." He said, "Oh, no, kid." He said, "That young gal's expecting us. We're going." I said, "Okay." And I went and I got him. I had an SUV and he had oxygen tanks and wheelchairs and hoses. I had more stuff than the paramedics have. And I load him into there and we'd make the two-hour drive to the meeting. There was no wheelchair access. The boys put him in the wheelchair and carried him down the stairs in the wheelchair. We got him to the front of that room, got his tanks there, plugged him into the wall. And he gave a talk like you wouldn't believe. He gave everything he had. And at the end, he was spent. And we got all the gear, all the stuff and that, and the boys got him into the truck, and he and I started heading up the road for a two-hour drive home. And he looked over as soon as we got to the parking lot, and he said to me, "Kid," he said, "I'm awfully glad you were with me tonight." Well, we were always together. We went everywhere together for 15 years. I said, "Well, I'm glad I was with you tonight too, Bobby." He said, no, kid." He said, "I'm really glad I was with you tonight." He said, "I think I just gave my last talk." You have to understand that we have a lot of speaker meetings in Ontario. My sponsor spoke at somewhere between 100 and 150 AA meetings a year for 45 years. I said, "Oh, Bob," I said, "you're tired tonight. You're going to feel better tomorrow." And I got him home and I got him up into the condo. I was going to leave. He said, "Kid," he said, "do you have a couple minutes?" I said, "I have all the time in the world." He said, "I want to look in my journal." And he got his journal and that, and he said, "Kid, it's okay. You can go home now." He said, "The journal's empty." And I left, and the next day I phoned him on June the 9th. He was feeling a wee bit better. And the next day on June the 10th, AA's birthday, at supper time, I called him and I didn't get an answer. And I waited about a half an hour and I phoned back and I didn't get an answer again. And I knew. And you know when you know and you don't want to know? And I drove around for 2 hours because I just didn't want to go see what I knew I was going to see. And I went and picked a new guy up that I was sponsoring. I said, "Come on, we got to go to the old guy's place." And I was crying. He said, "Butch, what's wrong?" I said, "The old man's gone." He said, "How do you know?" I said, "Because it's June the 10th and the journal's empty." And we got there and I got them to let me into the condo. And there was that little man I loved so much. And he was kneeling beside his bed and face down and he was gone. And man, it was like somebody opened up my heart or unzipped me and took out my heart. God, I felt an emptiness and a loneliness like I hadn't felt in a long time. And the paramedics come and the coroner and the police, all those people come, and we were there late into the night, and finally everybody gone. And I went home. I drove out to the lake. I had a home on the lake, and I went down and sat by the lake and I had a good cry. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying to you. That is not a sad story. That is not meant as a sad story. I had 15 years with one of the giants in Alcoholics Anonymous. He had almost 46 years of sobriety and a fellowship that he loved with all his life. That is not a sad story. But there was a part of my life that just changed and would never be the same again. And I missed them. I missed them already. And I had a good long cry, and I went in and I went up to my bed. And before getting into bed, I knelt down beside my bed and I thanked God for another day of sobriety. You see, my friends, Alcoholics Anonymous works in the good times and Alcoholics Anonymous works in the tough times. Alcoholics Anonymous works all the time. In those darkest hours, in those sometimes when life happens and we feel we can't make it another day, that our hearts are going to break in too. That's when the men and women in your home group will pick you up. And a power that you and I have been introduced to through these 12 steps, will carry you on every single time. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity and privilege of being here this weekend. I want to thank you people for your kindness and patience in listening to me here tonight. You know, I don't know what's going to happen from here on in, and none of us know for sure, do we? See, that's called life. Just because we become sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, members of Al-Anon, life doesn't stop happening. People die. Relationships end. Businesses fail. People get sick. Life still goes on. But I'll tell you something. Every single morning for many years now, I say to my friend upstairs first thing in the morning, I say, if you see fit, I sure would appreciate it if you keep me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because my dear friends, there is no place in this whole world I'd rather be than right here with you fine, fine people. Thank you and God bless you.
Our wish for you is that God will continue to shower you with choicest blessings. Thank you. Now we're going to call on Tim to thank Butch on our behalf.
Good evening, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Tim. And for those of you who know me, there's not very often that I'm speechless. And tonight, you know... What a great way to spend a Saturday evening. And, you know, it's from... I got turned on to Butch a couple years ago at the Midwinter Roundup, and I asked him to become a speaker and at our Roundup, and due to circumstances, he couldn't make it. And, you know, I firmly believe that God means us to be where we're at this particular time. And, you know, it was a long wait to finally meet Butch and to hear him share his message, but... you know, it was great to have him with us tonight. And this is a great part. This is one of the privileges of being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, to be able to stand up here and to just offer thanks to a great man and a great message. So, Butch, come on up and a small token of our appreciation, buddy.